Let religion be to us life and joy. Let it be a voice of renewing, challenge to the best we have and may be. Let it be a call to generous action. Let religion be to us a dissatisfaction with things that are, which bids us serve more eagerly the true and right. Let it be the sorrow that opens for us the way of sympathy, understanding, and service to suffering humanity. Let religion be to us the wonder and lure of that which is only partly known and understood. An eye that glories in nature's majesty and beauty, and a heart that rejoices in deeds of kindness and of courage. Let religion be to us security and serenity because of its truth and beauty, and because of the enduring worth and power of the loyalties that it engenders. Let it be to us hope and purpose and a discovering of opportunities to express our best through daily tasks. Religion uniting us with all that is admirable in human beings everywhere, holding before our eyes a prospect of the better life for humankind, which each may help to make actual. Now we give a great welcome to Reverend James Ford.
Thank you so much. A couple of years ago, I was in Connecticut to co-lead a Zen retreat. As the retreat ended, one of my co-leaders, Mary Gates, who is both a fully authorized Zen teacher and an Episcopal priest, excused herself. Mary explained she had to say Mass for the small congregation she served as vicar. Being me, I asked if I could tag along. The service was held in a tiny stone chapel in West Cornwall. The town is a Norman Rockwell image of old New England. It even has a covered bridge. The chapel, well, built in New England or picked up and moved from some bucolic English countryside, it was picture perfect. There were 18 of us in that little chapel, and we pretty much filled it. The service itself was Prayer Book Rite 2, with all that means for those of us familiar with the history of Episcopalian religious services. For me, as a progressive, it's filled with awkward, masculine by preference language. And as a Buddhist, with a full-on dualistic God out there and you and me down here theology. Not my cup of tea. And first, there were the people. I can't read hearts with any clarity, certainly not by outward appearances. But it felt the full range of who we are as we come to church, an intimate display. Young people may be there on their own, maybe just to make family happy. Older people, some quite elderly, where the actions of the pews came from decades of practice. Maybe done out of rote, but it looked more like well-traveled paths to something. I'll return to that. And a fair number in between. Some probably happy to have a service that ends early in the morning. Others, well, hard to say. A large basket of life. Although it sure felt most everyone was fully present, as they were. Sadness, hope, longing, joy. You know, the human thing. The things that we call religious. Or perhaps today we might rather say spiritual. Let's stick with religion for a bit. Today, I find myself concerned with the origins, or maybe it's the origin of religion. What is the font from which it springs? Or what tributaries gather to make it what it is? Admittedly, to try to understand what it is or what our most distant ancestors' religious or spiritual views were are, frankly, more than elusive. What happened, what folk thought before writing, what, 5,000 years ago, a tad more, can only be inferred by rapidly fading collections of artifacts. But they are compelling. like that Venice of Willendorf figurine, maybe 30,000 years old, it evokes feelings. And thoughts flow from looking at it like Pentecost fires. But beyond that atavistic feeling of ancient recollection, what? I think of those ancient artifacts and others, haunting evidences like ancient, ancient mountain trails used by our Neanderthal cousins as well as our direct ancestors, trails that wind through mountains in ways that seem to include at some disadvantage to efficiency, but allow enhanced views of distant beauty. There is a cave in Spain with what appears to be a 40,000 years old grave for a Neanderthal toddler. The grave site is surrounded by animal horns, including bison and red deer. Similar sites for Homo sapiens with what appear to be intentional burials, including grave goods and evidences of layers of flowers poured over the body that seem to range back at least 50 and maybe even 100,000 years ago. This said, as far back as we know with any certainty, religion and culture are profoundly entangled. Any attempt at pulling specifically religious perspectives out of the cultural matrix seemed to date no later than the European Reformation. And no one has ever succeeded in fully untangling religion from the rest of the mess of human lives in specific cultural contexts. In fact, from my perspective, one of the less pleasant aspects of religion is assuring cultural conformity. It sure seems true that religions have always been tied up with the transmission of culture, reinforcing the various ways in which people identify themselves and critically separate themselves from others. That us and them thing has from ancient times been religiously reinforced. Much of what shapes what we usually think of as religion birth at several places on the Eurasian continent in what is now called the Axial Age. It's a term coined by the philosopher Karl Jaspers for a culturally fruitful time, roughly between the 8th and 3rd centuries before our common era. Jaspers identified the religions that birthed in Greece, Judea, Persia, India, and China, all fulfilled that culturally reinforcing, essentially conservative and conserving task within their differing cultures. Although critically, with the birth of Buddhism, then a bit later Christianity, and lastly Islam, we find missionary religions. They no doubt carry with them cultural elements from their places of origin, lots, but they mostly bring certain big ideas at their heart that are meant to be shared with the whole world. And with that, the absolute connection between religion and given cultures would no longer be quite the same. That partial untangling has allowed us to notice religion as something not necessarily part of preserving a specific culture. And it has opened the possibility for us to look at what part, at that part of what it means to be human that we call religious or spiritual. And it turns out, from the beginning, it's been a mess. Speculation on what this might be, from some sense of a universal energy, mana, to ancestor worship, to scapegoats and sacrifices, to averting natural disasters, to guaranteeing the planet doesn't simply spin into eternal darkness, to begin a list. The list of things that seem important in religions is very long. And it doesn't really add up. Frankly, I found the 20th century Unitarian Universalist minister and theologian Forrest Church's observation most helpful. Religion is our human response to the dual reality of being alive and knowing we will die. I suggest when people speak of being spiritual but not religious, They are continuing our uniquely modern, or maybe that's postmodern, or I have trouble keeping up with these things. Perhaps it's postmodern stance of relentlessly untangling and examining the parts in hope of understanding the whole. In this case, we generally try to jettison those aspects of religion concerned with preserving and transmitting culture, and most of those unsavory parts defining who is in and who is out of the group. With that, what we call spirituality emerges as a hopefully purer distillation of the heart of the matter. Although what that might be remains far from clear. One can certainly question the degree to which we can extract ourselves from culture. Me, I suspect not a whole lot. But, like the scholar and religious historian Karen Armstrong suggests, I also believe we may indeed be in a new axial age. For me, starting with the European Enlightenment, enriched by a comparative religious sense, particularly arising out of our modern interreligious dialogue. It's something where things have been taken apart sufficiently, and surprisingly, a new whole is emerging. Something totally unexpected, like a new dawn, a world perspective. If you will, universalism. Not quite like the earliest forms of universalism, extending heaven to all, but equally, maybe more deserving of that word. Of course, it is a contending with those older views, and in this moment, I certainly wouldn't put money on what view will prevail. Personally, I can't put money on our species surviving for a whole lot longer. Still, also, out of all this, my personal stab at defining religion. Religion is that part of culture where our hopes and fears regarding life and death are expressed through stories and symbolic actions. And I think the spiritual at the heart of it, the secret truth that floats through all religions, that universalist current sometimes held up, sometimes scorned and suppressed, but always present, is a knowing that within all our diversity, there is some mysterious unity. And frankly, I think it is our only hope for survival as a species. If there is a universalism emerging within a new axial, it is this. Everything as it arises, you, me, a rock, star, is precious and beautiful. And it, that you, that me, that star, arises out of a profoundly connected web of relationships. That web itself is simply the relationship of things. Coming together, holding for a moment, falling away. But each thing, as it presents, is the universe itself. And we human beings, blessed beyond all reason, get to notice it. So, back to that mass in that little Episcopal chapel in West Cornwall, Connecticut, on the eastern side of the North American continent, on a small planet spinning around a middling star at the edge of one of a million, million galaxies. As the service worked its way through the story of Jesus and his disciples gathered at their meal, finally, the consecrated bread and wine were offered to all who were present. Me, I've been to many Episcopal services over the years. Episcopalians are, without a doubt, my favorite Christians. But I never take communion. As lovely as that tradition is, I always felt just enough of a separation that partaking in that most intimate part of the service never felt appropriate. Not respectful. Not right. This time it was different. Maybe in some degree it was my relationship with the priest, but that hardly would be enough. Something happened in that little stone chapel. I saw. I noticed. The whole universe was present. All the angels of Western faith and all the devas of the East were present and circling around that little altar that somehow became the navel of the cosmos. And without even thinking about it, maybe because I didn't think about it, I didn't worry about theology or proper decorum, without concern, but rather with a longing to come ever closer to the moment of creation, I stepped into that small circle. I received communion. This is not the only time I've had such a sense of invitation. I can offer a number of examples, but I'm a Zen teacher, so when we retired, Jan and I returned home here to Southern California. A mutual friend made sure I met a local Japanese Zen priest, the Reverend Gyokei Yokoyama. He leads a Japanese-American congregation in Long Beach where he conducts services and preaches sermons and tends to the pastoral needs of the people he serves. As I noted, mostly Japanese-Americans. In addition to his ministerial duties, he leads a Zen meditation group several mornings a week. Sadly, few in the congregation are interested in meditation, and his little group are mostly converts, mostly in the moment at least, of European descent. And while I am responsible for my own Zen group, I love going to the mornings he leads. I love it for a couple of reasons. One, I'm not in charge. I get to, as we say in the Zen way, just sit. And over these past couple of years, I've come to love that early morning schedule. The way the light comes in from the darkness as we begin, the mix of smells, particularly the slight hint of mildew mixed with sandalwood, that instantly returns me to my youth sitting in the old Berkeley Zendo where I first began my practices many, many years ago. It's delicious. But the main reason I'm doing this is that I have committed myself to trying to relearn the sacramental functions of a Soto Zen priest. I first learned them pushing on 50 years ago, but after my time in the monastery, I ended up practicing with a koan teacher who was not a priest, and well, that part of my Zen life more or less fell away. In my dotage, I'm on a path of integration, and a part of that is more fully understanding the priestly part of the tradition. I found this in some ways just relearning to bow. Never a bad thing. Not a bad thing for any of us. And so Wednesday and Friday mornings, I at least figuratively put on the black robe of a novice priest, sit a bit, and then try to master the liturgical ropes presented by a kind and generous teacher. And I really put the pressure on him to be kind and generous. One day, not long ago, I found myself standing near the altar as the sensei approached it. The form is closely prescribed. Every motion has 1,000 years of practice behind it, within it, as it. He walked up with his hands folded at his chest. As he stepped to the altar itself, he put his hands together, palm to palm. He picked up a waiting stick of incense and held it to his forehead, bowing slightly. And I realized in that moment, as Gyokei offered that incense for the world, it was the same moment as when Mary held up the chalice as an offering for the world. The truth has always been there, hidden in plain sight. You want to know the origin of religion? To see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower? Hold infinity in the palm of your hand. Just notice. Just be present. Just this. Just this. The origin of religion.